Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. California declared a state of emergency this week in the face of a growing monkeypox outbreak to speed up and better coordinate the government response. Los Angeles and San Francisco had already declared their own emergencies as case numbers grew among men who have sex with men. Monkeypox is far less contagious than COVID and rarely fatal, but can be painful and leave scars. With vaccines in short supply, we learn how best to stay protected and take your monkeypox questions. Join us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. California now has more than 1,100 monkeypox cases, and it continues to disproportionately infect gay and bisexual men. That's despite having an effective vaccine and medicine to treat monkeypox. The problem has been accessing them. Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist at UCSF, has been diagnosing and treating people with monkeypox and joins us now to take your questions, which you can ask by emailing forum@kqed.org or finding us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. We're at KQED Forum. Dr. Chin Hong, glad to have you back.
Thanks for having me on, Mina.
As I mentioned in the intro, you've seen cases of monkeypox. What kinds of things are you dealing with right now?
So in terms of the range of cases, they're from the very minor with very limited disease, primarily in the genital area, to very, very severe, needing hospitalization. And people are generally hospitalized for a variety of reasons with monkeypox, but it's usually because of intractable pain and pain in certain areas that makes it very difficult to do bodily functions. In addition, people have been hospitalized for having another severe complication like disseminated syphilis or even syphilis in the brain. So we've had a variety of more serious cases, but I would say the vast majority of cases have been more milder, but milder in the terms of risk of dying, but very major in terms of pain that it causes.
Yes. What are the symptoms of infection? Pain, of course, is one of them, but what others should people be on the lookout for?
Well, I think it all depends on what your host status is. So somebody, for example, who has existing inflammatory bowel disease, if you get monkeypox on top of that, we're worried because it may cause you to get something we call strictures, which is, where two pieces of the bowel might join together and may get stuck and may be difficult in the future with pain, et cetera. So those are some of the complications we worry about. Others is just as an infectious disease doctor, the fact that so much of your skin is involved, you can get other bacteria like Staph aureus get into this bloodstream, and that's why some people do poorly. There have been not many deaths, luckily. It's not like COVID, but the few deaths that have been reported usually involve another bacteria getting in when the walls of defenses from the skin have been decimated.
We've been hearing that there's a long incubation period. Some people may experience fever, etc. What should people do if they are experiencing, say, a rash or fever initially?
I think the biggest takeaway message I hope listeners get is that have a really, really low threshold for diagnosis and asking for tests. The test is so easy to do, but there are some caveats with the test. First of all, I know that providers are still learning along as listeners are learning. So sometimes you may need to highlight why you think it might be monkeypox. And in my opinion, we're not doing enough testing. The commercial labs, we have 5 commercial labs up and running. They can do tens of thousands of tests a week, but we're not even scratching the surface of that capacity, meaning that two things. People are not coming forward with maybe early stages of disease because it might look very mild, like a pimple or an ingrown hair. And providers are not recognizing it enough, but it's super easy to do testing. Another complication is that we have only been authorized, you know, by guidance to do testing on the skin. But a lot of times people have really young stages of rashes, so the skin may not be as involved yet. So I would encourage folks to think about, you know, thinking about other parts of the body, the rectum, the urethra, the mouth, that may have disease that may not be easily captured if somebody just does an exam on the skin.
Yes, we've been hearing, well, two things. One is that there have been challenges with testing and also then with tests where people do have monkeypox coming up positive. I guess you're touching on the reasons for both of those. Is that getting better? Are people getting trained? Is more testing happening? Are people testing in the right way?
I think we're getting there, but I think the big theme of any response the U.S. has had so far to any pandemic has been slow. I mean, if you look at the ingredients of our response, it looks great, right? PCR check, vaccine check, drugs check, but the tempo that we get to use these ingredients, you know, I think, you know, hindsight is always 2020, but, you know, I feel like some people believe that we've been asleep at the wheel, and particularly in the beginning when we had, you know, our first case back on May 17th.
Well, Ben writes, how dangerous is the public swimming pool for possible monkeypox exposure? Does chlorine kill the virus? How does monkeypox spread, Dr. Chin Hong?
I think one of the big take-home points is that the hierarchy of risk is very, very different from one to the other. So in terms of Benson, to begin with, it's very, very low risk to get monkeypox in a swimming pool. As listeners may know, the biggest font size is really skin-to-skin contact in an intimate setting. And the reason why that's so important for transmission is that somebody may have a rash or a lesion full of virus. And then in an intimate setting, you make these micro abrasions or small cuts in the skin, and the virus can enter very easily in that way. The other ways that the virus can affect people is possibly through sexual transmission and bodily fluids. It's been isolated in blood, in semen, but we don't know what that means in terms of infectivity. Another...
Sorry, if I could just clarify. So you mean you're not sure if it's an actual sexually transmitted infection?
Yes.
Or we know that it's not. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, that's right. I should clarify. You can get it during an intimate contact, but as a traditional card-carrying sexually transmitted infection, it's likely, but that's not probably the primary way. It's, you know, just skin to skin. So you can use a condom, for example, but still get monkeypox because you may have a lesion that's adjacent to an uninfected partner. And then from the act of making these microabrasions, have the virus go from the infected person to the uninfected. But other routes like bedding, really enriched only if that person has active disease, slept in the bedding and you know shake the sheets the next morning, but not in an average going to a thrift store or going to, you know, get bedding in Bed Bath and Beyond, for example, that's very, very low risk. Saliva is also a possible risk factor, but that requires prolonged, for example, kissing for several hours, 3 to 6 hours. And in the 30,000 foot view, monkeypox virus is an animal virus. Its sweet spot is a rat or a squirrel, or as in 2003, a prairie dog in the United States, but not a human. So it's harder to get monkeypox than a regular other virus. And the human version of monkeypox is, of course, smallpox, which was eradicated in the 70s.
Well, Amy asks, I've been hearing that it's predominantly skin-to-skin contact, but there seems to be a lot of differing opinions about fomite transmission. Also hearing it's airborne and it's not airborne, depending on who you listen to. You know, can I catch this from touching a card at a grocery store? Can you clarify for Amy, Dr. Chin Hong?
Yes. So let's start with probably one of the most controversial areas right now, which is the idea of whether or not you can catch it in the air. Yes, in theory, you can. meaning that if somebody sleeps in a bed with monkeypox scars and scabs, and it goes on the bed sheets, and you wave the bed sheet around the next morning, these little scabs fill a virus which can survive for some time, but then go in the air, and if you inhale it, you can be afflicted with monkeypox. That's why in some households, some individuals have gotten it that way. But in general, it's going to be not the same way we think about droplet or airborne in COVID. COVID is a respiratory virus by its definition. Monkeypox is not, but that air is only because these small scabs are floating in the air temporarily. For example, there's been a case report of a healthcare worker in the UK who acquired monkeypox by infected bedding without using, PPE in the hospital setting. So I think that is the way you think about, how it's efficiently transmitted within a household, within a household contact. In terms of fomites, it goes for the same. The risk of just touching object in the gym or in the yoga studio is very, very small. It's really in the context of a household where you're touching the same things multiple times over and over again for multiple hours. So that's the theme. When you look at these risk factors, you can get it that way. Whether or not you're likely to get it that way is another question. And it's going to be in the general population, very, very small.
Yeah. So just to underscore, what's the overall public risk of getting monkeypox, Dr. Chin Hong?
Very, very small at this point. You're much more likely to get something like COVID than monkeypox. Although I know it's really scary to people, there are also silver linings about monkeypox that we can get to, which is what happens after you get exposed, where you can get a vaccine or you can get treatment, at some point.
And that's been the real difficulty as well. Just really quickly, this listener says there's been a second pediatric monkeypox case. What should parents do? I guess the question I have is, why are children deemed as sort of high risk or vulnerable groups?
I think that's also a really interesting topic to discuss. So our sort of thinking about kids as being high risk is based on the other kind of monkeypox virus, which is more predominant in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where kids have about a 10% mortality rate. But the type of virus that's circulating in this outbreak has a less than 1% mortality rate, even in Western Africa. So it's the more benign case. And we want to be conservative and think that kids are also going to be potentially at risk, like the more serious one that's not circulating now. So that's where that comes from. And because it's more disseminated in that particular clade, we want to make sure that kids are doing okay. But the kids so far in the US and around the world, I think there have been more than 80 of them who've been exposed, were mainly in household contact setting, not in general population. And they've done pretty well. Certainly the ones in the US with confirmed monkeypox virus have been treated with TPOX, and they've done pretty well.
We're taking your monkeypox questions with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, an infectious disease specialist at UCSF Medical Center. After the break, we'll hear about experiences of trying to get vaccines and treatment. Stay with us. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Here's what we're talking about tomorrow. Few people who are denied abortion care end up putting their child up for adoption. We explore why and hear from women who did choose adoption and what the experience was like. If this is you and you'd like to share your story, you can email forum@kqed.org or leave a voicemail at 415-553-3300. Today, we're talking about monkeypox with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist at UCSF Medical Center, who has been diagnosing and treating people with monkeypox. And you, our listeners, if you have an experience of trying to get tested or treated for monkeypox that you'd like to share, if you have questions about monkeypox or thoughts on the state and federal response so far, you can email forum at kqed.org, post them on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at KQED Forum, or call 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Let me go to Arlinda in Oakland. Hi, Arlinda. Go right ahead.
Hi. My question are those who are vaccinated for smallpox protected from monkeypox?
Arlinda, thanks.
That's a great question from Arlinda. We don't know the full answer yet, but I think it's really interesting that, you know, I haven't seen a lot of, individuals over the age of 50 with serious disease. And in the studies both published in The Lancet Infectious Disease and the New England Journal, the median age was men in their 30s or early 40s, not a lot of men over the age of 50. So many people believe that even though, immunization would have been some time ago, that it may likely attenuate or make the disease less severe if you've had the smallpox vaccine before, which was stopped in the U.S. in the 70s and many places around the world, in terms of keeping your disease expression milder if you did get exposed. But again, this is more speculation, but it's kind of, corroborated by just people we've been seeing. And I see the most serious cases just being in the hospital. So that's kind of an interesting correlation.
Yes. Though if you want to talk about the effectiveness of the vaccine that we are trying to get so many more vials of in both prevention and even in as something to be given post-exposure, if there's anything you'd like to add to that, Dr. Chin Hong.
Yes. So the interesting thing about the vaccine, and it's kind of a silver lining, we believe, is that because the incubation period is so long with monkeypox. So in COVID, you get exposed and maybe 3 days later you feel symptoms. In monkeypox, it could be up to 2 weeks, sometimes longer, average day of 7 days in this outbreak, but up to 2 weeks. So that means that you get the vaccine. In COVID, it doesn't matter because it's so fast, but in monkeypox, it's slower. So if you get the vaccine, we believe that it aborts the disease even within the first 4 days. And if you get it within the first 2 weeks, if you haven't gotten a rash by then, getting a vaccine may make your disease less severe. And that's because of the long incubation period. So that's what we know about the vaccine. A lot of what we know about the vaccine is extrapolated from smallpox, and we don't have a lot of data in this particular outbreak about efficacy of the vaccine. So, I think listeners who've gotten the vaccine or who will get the vaccine, we all need to keep an open mind that it may act a little bit differently with this. But I think even the most skeptical immunologists, experts believe that at least you'll be protected against serious disease if you get the vaccine for this particular kind of outbreak.
Well, I want to bring into the conversation now Tom Temprano, political director at Equality California, an LGBTQ plus rights advocacy organization. Tom, really glad to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me, Mina. Glad to be here.
I wanted to ask you about your experience trying to access the vaccine and when you tried to do it.
Sure. So I am here in San Francisco, which, as Dr. Chin Hong knows, is one of the most impacted cities in the entire country right now, and received a couple weeks after San Francisco Pride weekend a notice from an event producer for an event that I attended along with probably a couple thousand other mostly gay and bisexual men, that there had been someone or multiple people at the event who had tested positive for monkeypox. And fortunately, these event producers had, worked with the Department of Public Health to provide information about what those of us who were at the event and possibly exposed should do. That included, providing numbers for a couple different Department of Public Health clinics, and for the San Francisco AIDS Foundation. And we were all encouraged to call and set up an appointment to receive the vaccine. This was on a Tuesday, I think the Tuesday following the 4th of July weekend. And I, of course, called all three numbers, left voicemails, and then I waited and I waited and I waited and was getting very close to that 14-day exposure window, at which point, you know, the vaccine is not as effective in stopping severe symptoms. And you know, was checking in with other folks who had also been at the event who had called the numbers, and we were just in the dark and not sure when we would hear back, whether it would be in time, where we would be able to access the vaccine. And so, like so many other gay and bisexual men across the country right now, started to rely on, you know, social media and our, you know, our peer network for real-time information that at that point was severely lacking anywhere else. You know, I was fortunate. I was that Friday afternoon, the end of that 14-day period, and a friend of mine who actually stood up the COVID hub here in the Castro for the LGBTQ community posted pretty much unconfirmed, we're hearing there may be a vaccine drop-in at SF General this afternoon, drop everything and go. And, you know, without knowing whether it was really happening, I did just that. I let my work know that I was going to need to take the rest of the day off, got in an Uber, and in the, you know, 30 minutes between when I saw the post and when I got there, there was already maybe 150 folks in line. That grew to hundreds and hundreds within another hour. And we just waited. I waited 3.5 hours in line. You know, there was rampant rumors about vaccine doses running out and, you know, we might as well go home and we shouldn't be there. And unfortunately, a lot of folks did. But I figured until someone in the lab coat tells me I'm out of luck, I'm going to, you know, do my best. And again, 3.5 hours later was lucky to get that first dose, was scheduled for a second dose, which, you know, was later canceled. But I actually, you know, despite my fear and frustration, I think had a much better experience than many other folks who have tried over, you know, the weeks that followed to get that vaccine. Some of whom went 3-4 times to SF General, waited in line starting at 5 o'clock in the morning, only to be turned away again and again. So as frustrating as my story was, I do think it's actually one of the better ones here in San Francisco.
Wow, that just sounds so incredibly stressful. I'm glad you got the shot. Why did they cancel the second shot, Tom?
So, you know, San Francisco and I think many other places have moved to a one-dose strategy because we just don't have enough vaccines. And, you know, while I think for a public health perspective, that's probably the right thing to do. There's decent efficacy after the first dose. It still is not right that we don't have enough doses coming in from the federal government to actually fully vaccinate at-risk populations. And I say another, you know, a frustration I had with my second dose cancellation was the reason I found out about it, and, you know, many folks found out about it, was because of a hearing that Supervisor Raphael Mandelman, probably not going to happen. I did get a follow-up call from DPH alerting me, but it was, you know, everything's changing quickly and I get it, but I think we all just want some more reliable real-time information in the midst of this public health crisis.
Yes. So poor communication. Also just we are learning more and more details of how much the federal government miscalculated and responded slowly as well to the early stages of this outbreak when it could have been containable. I'm just curious, Tom, if that sends a message to you and what message that sends to you.
You know, I think it is, it's a little, and again, Dr. Chin Hong hit on this, but it's a little frustrating to see a flat-footed response to the first public health crisis coming out of the last 2.5 years of the COVID-19 pandemic. It does not instill particular confidence that we're prepared for even bigger outbreaks when, you know, we knew this was going to happen eventually. We had a vaccine that had we adequately prepared and manufactured could have snuffed this thing out, you know, a month ago. This we would not even be having this conversation if we actually had taken this seriously and had adequate testing capacity, adequate vaccine access. And, you know, I certainly, you know, as I think many folks know, right, you know, this monkeypox is certainly not a gay disease. Anyone can catch it through the means that Dr. Chin Hong shared, but it is disproportionately impacting the LGBTQ plus community right now. And while I don't think that there was anything intentional about a slow response, I have heard from many folks in the LGBTQ plus community, especially those who were around in the days in the 1980s for the AIDS crisis, where there truly was a awful government response, which this is nowhere near the level of that, but who can't help but ask, is the reason we aren't acting with the urgency that we ought to be because this is only impacting gay, bisexual men and trans folks at this moment? And again, I don't think that that is why. I don't believe that is why, but it certainly is a pervasive feeling out there amongst the community.
Yeah, you are hearing how it's resurfacing some painful memories. Well, Tom Tempano, I really appreciate you coming on to share your experience. I hope you're hearing that things are getting a little bit better in terms of access, but maybe I'm wrong.
Little by little. And again, I do think, you know, really appreciative of our state and local governments for declaring public health emergencies and taking this seriously and showing the impacted communities that they are. I think now what we just need is, you know, tens, hundreds of thousands, millions of more doses than we currently have. And I hope we get there soon.
Tom Timprano of Equality California, thank you.
Thanks, Mina.
We're talking about monkeypox and the state and federal response to it. And you, our listeners, are joining with your questions and comments and have shared them ahead of the show. The email address, forum@kqed.org. Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram is where you can post your comments at KQED Forum, or you can call us at 866-733-6786. Peter Chin Hong, there are a couple of questions here related to how you're determining who's eligible for vaccines. This listener is quite frustrated. This listener tweets, "My partner is a massage therapist. It's atrocious that he can't get a vaccine just because he doesn't have sex with men. He's not only at risk himself, but at great risk of becoming a vector. We need to thoughtfully expand vaccine access." Jessica writes, "I know that limited vaccines need to go to those with the highest exposure right now, but I also know that men who have sex with men aren't that removed from the general population. There's crossover in sexual and casual contact. Are we going to see a need for general vaccination among everyone in the future? When might that happen?" What would you say to these two listeners? I guess, how do you feel about the way that we are doing access now, and then do you think that it could expand as Jessica is asking, and if that's necessary?
I think both listeners' their points really resonate with me, and I know how anxiety-provoking it is to everyone, and emotionally laden, particularly given our vaccine rollout for COVID and how we felt about that. My feeling is that I think the focus right now is appropriate, just given the limitations of the resources that we have. We have to enrich the population that's being affected right now with the protection so that it doesn't go out to the general population instead of a scattergun approach. However, the longer we wait, and we are waiting a very long time to mobilize this, it's going to spill over in the general population, like the listeners mentioned. And, you know, time is money. And that's what I think many of us are worried about.
Yeah. Well, on the line now is State Senator Scott Wiener. Scott Wiener, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I understand, Senator Wiener, that you are on the Select Committee on Monkeypox. I think it was just very recently formed. Can you talk about what you've identified as the most crucial thing that the state needs to do right now to improve its response to this outbreak?
So our Senate leader, Senator Tony Atkins from San Diego, asked me to chair and form a Select Committee on Monkeypox. So we've done that. And we'll be having an oversight hearing next Tuesday afternoon in the Capitol. And we'll be hearing from state and local public health officials, from physicians who are treating monkeypox patients, and from advocates in the community who are organizing around this. And we're also, we have put in a formal request for an emergency budget appropriation of $38.5 million to support county public health response to monkeypox, because the counties are on the front line. They're going to have to expand testing, stand up vaccination sites, education and outreach. And San Francisco, LA have a lot of public health resources. When you start getting into other counties that have much more limited public health infrastructure, the state needs to be there. So that's a big focus. You know, I think San Francisco and our state health officials, I think, really got this quickly and reacted quickly with a sense of urgency. And I've had regular conversations with our Secretary of Health and Human Services, Mark Galley, Dr. Aragon, our state health officer, and our Dr. Colfax and Dr. Phillip in San Francisco. But it's hard to overstate how badly the federal government dropped the ball and put us in this position. You know, the federal government funded this vaccine to the tune of $1 billion and then had over 20 million doses and allowed them to expire without replacing them, all while experts were telling us for years and years that monkeypox was going to spread outside of Africa and was going to come here. And so we are so far behind because of the federal government. And then they didn't react quickly in April and May. They didn't put in an order for vaccines quickly enough, so other countries got in line ahead of us. And so we are left trying to play catch up. And we are doing the very best we can with vaccine scarcity. The wait list on the San Francisco AIDS Foundation for vaccines is unbelievably huge, you know, blocks long lines every time San Francisco General reopens its clinic. And then, of course, we promptly run out of vaccines. It's really horrific. So we need to make sure we're setting up the infrastructure at the state and local level, which we are doing. And then we need to get those vaccines. But the one last thing I want to mention, once again, showing a federal failure, the original formula in terms of deciding how much vaccines each state would get, 75% of that formula was based on how many cases the states would have. So states like California, Illinois, Florida, New York, and then Washington, D.C. would get higher levels because we have so many cases. The CDC just flipped that formula. So now only 25% of the formula is based on how many cases a state has. And so we're now going to see fewer vaccines coming to the most impacted states, which is another just ridiculous decision by the federal government.
We're coming up on a break, but is there anything you can do to reverse that or put pressure to change that formula?
We're looking into what we can do. It's been really hard. It's just the federal government has been very challenging around this, and we clearly need to push, and we will.
We'll have more with Senator Wiener and Dr. Chin Hong after the break. Stay with us. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Coming up tomorrow on Forum, few people who are denied abortion care end up putting their child up for adoption. We explore why and hear from women who did choose adoption and what the experience was like. If this is you and you'd like to tell your story, leave us a voicemail at 415-553-3300 or email us forum@kqed.org. To listen to past Forum shows or subscribe to our podcast, visit kqed.org/forum. For the latest updates on our programs and guests, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, check us out on Instagram. We're at KQED Forum.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We are taking your questions and hearing your experiences with monkeypox, and we're joined by Dr. Peter Chin Hong, an infectious disease specialist at UCSF Medical Center, and Senator Scott Wiener, California State Senator representing San Francisco. You, our listeners, are joining at 866-733-6786 by posting your thoughts on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at KQED Forum, by emailing comments and questions to forum at kqed.org. Let me go to Patrick in South San Francisco. Hi, Patrick.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I wanted to relate. I do agree that what we're seeing a problem at the federal level, but it appears there's also a problem at the county level, at least within San Mateo County. San Mateo County Health Department's website indicates they're giving their monkeypox vaccines away to other jurisdictions. I called my supervisor, David Canepa's office, to ask about this, and they were told, they related to me, that I should go to San Francisco and stand in line for hours on end to try to get a vaccine. When I said, hey, can my supervisor go to bat for me? Because if the state is giving San Mateo County vaccines, they should be used here first. If there's excess, sure, we can give them to other people. And the supervisor refuses to act. And I trust he's not against gay men in San Mateo County, but it seems there is a local issue going on right now.
Mm. Senator Wiener, have you heard about something like this? Could you help Patrick?
So what I will say is the way vaccine allocations work in California is Los Angeles, being a mega county of like 10 million people, receives a direct allocation from the federal government. Same with like Cook County in Illinois or New York City. The other 57 counties receive an allocation through the state. And so every week or so, the state receives an allocation and then sends them down to the counties. The state is basing a lot of the allocation based on how many cases you have. San Francisco has about 50%, one half of all infections in California, even though we are 2% of the population. We have about as many cases as all of LA County, which is 12 times bigger. And so a lot of the vaccines are going into San Francisco because of how hard hit. And the Chronicle actually listed out all the counties yesterday. And after LA and San Francisco, it just plummets. We want San Mateo County to have enough vaccine, but it's so scarce now that that's probably not going to happen for a while. People can come to San Francisco, and when they say wait in line, San Franciscans have to wait in line. It's not ideal. It's not what we want, but that's where we are now. People are also going over to Steamworks, the gay bathhouse in Berkeley, to wait in line there on Wednesdays at noon. So again, it's a bad situation that did not have to be this way. The federal government put us here, but we are where we are. And unfortunately for now, people are having to wait in line.
Senator Wiener, you've said that tragically, as in often the case when a disease targets marginalized communities, the national public health response has been slow and deprioritized. What are you saying here?
That is just, it's a tragedy of public health that, you know, when you have, I mean, the U.S. in many ways made a lot of mistakes around COVID, but at least there was a very rapid response in terms of testing, in terms of, you know, getting a vaccine invented from scratch, not from scratch. There was a lot of research already about, but for a new virus within less than a year. And here we have a disease where we know about this virus. We don't know everything, but it's been around for over half a century. We know a lot about it. We actually have a vaccine. We have a treatment that is not approved for monkeypox, but anecdotally, treating physicians tell me it seems to work. And it's just been really slow. But let's also be clear. Monkeypox has been circulating in West and Central Africa among humans since 1970, 52 years. And we've had a vaccine for quite some time. And we were told that it was going to spread outside of Africa. And people in Africa have been suffering with it. And why on earth did we not flood Central and West Africa with the monkeypox vaccine to try to control it there, to stomp it out, and to be there for Africans? Why? Because it's Africa. It's Black people in Africa, and the world ignores it. And then it comes to Europe and the U.S., affecting gay and bi men, and the world is incredibly slow in moving forward. And instead, it becomes a bunch of sex shaming and slut shaming that, oh, it's all your fault for having sex. This is the same with HIV. Instead of taking an actual public health strategy of dealing with it, we see this strategy that is not a public health strategy, telling people just not to have sex. It doesn't work. It's never worked. And so absolutely, when marginalized communities are the ones being impacted by illness, society does not act quickly enough.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong, what do you see as the trajectory of monkeypox in California as a result of where we are and how we've handled it to this point?
I'm an optimistic person, you know, but even myself, I don't really see a lot of bright light in the next few months. I think we'll continue to see a lot of sick people. There'll be a lot of pain and suffering in the community. And we won't have enough vaccines until next year. I mean, and in the meantime, I think a lot of people will be anxious. We've looked forward to this time to re-engage with community, and now all of a sudden people are again worried about another outbreak. And I'm worried about hospital system. I'm worried about inequities and how we are distributing not just vaccines, but medicines, TPOX.
Yes.
It's very, very tough right now. And I think only people in the know or counties in the know have access to it.
So can you explain why the medication that, as Senator Wiener was saying, he's heard is quite effective is also so hard to access?
Well, it's hard to access because it's still an investigational drug for monkeypox, although it's been FDA approved for smallpox since 2019. So because it's called an investigational drug, it's issued by the CDC under something called a EAIND, which is through an expanded access program. But for every patient, even though the CDC has their ethics board reviewed it, that different small clinics can rely on in academic centers and large hospitals, you might have to also go through your local board ethics board just briefly. But I think probably the major limitation is the time it takes to sit with a patient, do informed consent, follow up at day 7 after treatment, even if they're getting better, fill out paperwork. And again, because this is not a national public health emergency, there's no kitty bank for monkeypox treatment. So hospitals, healthcare systems have to eat up administrative costs for administering this medicine. You have to have investigational drug pharmacists or pharmacists who know how to track investigational drugs, even though it's kind of weird because it's approved for smallpox, but it's called investigational drug for monkeypox. It's very safe, but yet we have all of these hoops to jump through. If it was an emergency use authorization like Paxlovid, it could be available at Walgreens and then we can prescribe it there. But because it's investigational drug and there are these activation energy barriers to get it, it's available in some places, not in others. We're treating the sickest of the sick, whereas we know that in every antiviral ever in infectious diseases, the earlier you treat, the better. Think Paxlovid. But we're back to remdesivir era, except we have tons of TPOX. We have over 2 million doses in the national stockpile.
Yeah, and if I could just jump in there.
Please.
The originally, CDC or the feds were requiring about a physician to fill out like 20 pages of paperwork to get authorization and send pictures, and it was sort of a mess. The federal government did streamline it, but it's still like, I think, 6 pages. It's still a lot. My understanding is that it looks like today the federal government may declare a state of emergency around monkeypox.
Yeah, I'm seeing that reporting too.
Yeah, if that happens, I believe that could open up doors for an emergency use authorization for TPOX for monkeypox. Because I think you need a state of emergency to have an emergency use authorization. If that happens, then that could be a game changer.
Well, Ben writes, why is there only one company making this vaccine? Is it hard to come up with the ingredients of this vaccine? Any way we can try to make the vaccine here with all these pharmaceutical companies we have in the U.S.?
So we can. So basically, this vaccine, the U.S. government basically funded it. A Danish company that U.S. government put about $1 billion into it, which is great. And the reason they invented it was the live virus smallpox vaccine cannot be used on people who are immunocompromised, and this can because it's an attenuated virus. So yes, this company can license the virus to other pharmaceutical companies, and I believe they've already indicated they're willing to do that. But it takes time for other companies to gear up their manufacturing. It doesn't happen overnight. And so a lot of us have been calling on the federal government to really act with a sense of urgency to get this license to other, preferably larger pharmaceutical companies that can start mass producing. But it just doesn't happen quickly.
Let me go to Deidre in Riverside. Hi, Deidre.
Hi, my name is Deirdre. I'm a NICU nurse. Oh, no problem. I'm a NICU nurse, and I'm seeing a similar delayed response, actually no discussion at all about monkeypox within the workplace. And I do recall back to the late 2019, bringing up COVID and being very concerned about that in my RN quality practice board meetings and trying to discuss this with infection control. And there was eventually a response, but it was very delayed. And now I'm concerned. What my concern is I'm a healthy middle-aged adult. I could probably survive monkeypox. It is definitely not a gay disease. It's not a sexually transmitted infection even. It does and can survive on fomites, you know, hard surfaces and textiles. And I'm just concerned that if we don't have a proactive response, we're going to find one or two healthcare workers or more, bring it into an environment where there are very small and immunocompromised babies that cannot get vaccinated, and how devastated that could be. Mm. And so when will we possibly get a response from the CDC, the government, something to direct healthcare institutions, because it's really scary to go to work and it's like radio silence. Nobody's discussing this.
Well, Deirdre, let me see if Dr. Chin Hong has some thoughts for you. Deirdre's concerns, well, Dr. Chin Hong, I don't know if you can answer the question about
definitely.
The CDC. But
I definitely hear Deirdre, but I would want to just reassure everyone that if you use universal precautions for COVID, that you will be very well protected against monkeypox. And that's what healthcare environments are doing still. So I have no worries at all in the healthcare environment because, again, luckily, the same interventions we use for COVID work for monkeypox. And it's not just, I don't have any worries about spread within the hospitals, at least from what we know so far, and where it is in the community. I would say that there is a lot of stigma happening. And you asked me, Mina, about what I'm worried about in the next few months. I think I'm worried about more and more stigma. We've already had reports of phlebotomists refusing to draw blood from patients with monkeypox, yes. Which doesn't make any sense if you're drawing blood from HIV patients and you use universal precautions, you should be protected against monkeypox. And there's not, we don't know how transmissible even it is in the blood, but again, you're protecting yourself. And we do need blood work to take care of these patients. So that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about people who are worried about hugging people from a potentially suspected person who might be at risk for monkeypox, which I've already started hearing about. So these are all things that I'm worried about because these emotional scars will linger on people long after the physical scars drop off.
We're talking about monkeypox, and you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Edward tweets, I cannot believe that after every flood, fire, hurricane, and the COVID pandemic, we still don't have an app that provides accurate information, collects self-reporting of positive tests, and points to access to aid and vaccination appointments. Dr. Chin Hong, I spoke with you, I think, at a time when case numbers in California were at 50. And even at that point, I think you were feeling like it's too late to contain it and it will likely be endemic. Does that basically mean that you are expecting that monkeypox is ultimately here to stay? And can you talk about what that potentially means if you still feel that way?
Yeah, I'm becoming more and more pessimistic that we can control this because it's not only just in the United States, and we've been focusing on California and the U.S. But remember, there's monkeypox happening in more than 75 countries that don't usually have it. So that means that we are not able to provide vaccines to everyone. It's like COVID all over again, except that this could have been preventable. Again, hindsight, 2020, et cetera. If a few vaccines early on with a fewer people infected could have contained it. But right now, the longer you wait, the more and more vaccines you're going to need. The WHO is already talking about breaking up the JYNNEOS into more than one shots to try and see if it can work on people around the world. So it's kind of at an extremist place. And again, you know, what it means, Mina, is that I'm seeing a patient in, 5 years from now, and every single time I see a patient with a rash, I have to worry about monkeypox. I have to send a monkeypox test when I would prefer not to even think about it normally.
Senator Wiener, based on what you're hearing about the timetable for vaccines and so on, and some of the experiences that we've heard, I guess I just wonder if you can give our listeners a sense of a time when things might be a little easier, especially among men who have sex with men in the gay and bisexual community who are really feeling this so intensely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, as a gay man, I'm deeply enmeshed in the LGBTQ community, and particularly among gay men. And there is a lot of fear now. I mean, people know this is not the same as HIV in terms of it, at least back in the 80s, being potentially a death sentence. It's different than that. But people also know the intense agony that this is causing in people, that it's just a disaster to have to experience that pain. So there is a lot of fear, a sense of abandonment. There are also a lot of gay men who are just sort of, they're not as tuned in, and they're just now starting to say, oh my God, I need to get this vaccine. And then they can't get it. And so people are scared. We are going to see an uptick in vaccine availability as time goes by in the coming months. And we'll actually see some increased availability this month. My concern is that even that increased demand could swamp the increased supply as more and more people realize they need to get it. And, if this moves into non-LGBTQ communities, we're going to really see a tidal wave of demand. So I am, I'm an optimist too, like Dr. Chin-Hung, but I'm concerned.
Senator Scott Wiener, Dr. Peter Chin-Hung of UCSF, thanks to both of you. Thanks, Caroline Smith, for producing this segment. Thank you, listeners, for listening. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.